Hey everyone, welcome to Founders 365 with me, Stephen Hagerty. Today I'm joined by the founder of Hellstrom Group, Mr. Jonathan Pritchard. How are you today, Jonathan?
Doing way too well. Glad to be here, man.
Doing way too well. That means that you just turned a positive into a negative straight off the bat.
That's what I do. I like to turn things upside down.
I expected better of you. But welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here. You join me from across the pond, so it's lunchtime for you, evening for me. So appreciate you spending a Saturday lunchtime talking to little old me. And this should be
you
fun.
Got it. Yeah.
It should be fun. So without further ado, let's jump straight into this. Let the listeners and viewers know, what is it that Hellstrom Group does?
It's a long story medium. Is that basically we help our clients get connected to their customers and clients themselves. So we do that mostly through training in sales, negotiation, presentation skills, and all of it is centered around ethical influence. So basically we do 2-day workshops on each of those topics, depending on what our customers and clients need the most. And also it branches out to doing trade shows and helping them get leads from in-person events, which has been put on pause. But, you know, with the world as it is, we still need to be able to connect. And a lot of our communication is exactly like what we're doing now through Zoom, through online video platforms. And a lot of folks who are used to the handshake, word of mouth referral business generating strategies that are just no longer viable, they're having to leapfrog 10 years worth, right? Because basically, if all this wackiness hadn't happened, the in-person approaches would still work. But yeah, now almost every single business is being forced to adopt digital strategies. So it's still exactly the same processes of having a conversation, building trust, communicating your value in a way that your clients and customers will be able to understand. So we've been able to pivot and address those concerns for our clients as well. So that's kind of the long story short, is helping our customers be able to get more business through better communication.
And listen, that's what business is all about. That's what humanity is all about. And I love it. But From looking you up online, let's say I've done a little bit of research.
Uh-huh.
You are probably one of the most what's the right word I'm going for here? Maybe the creative founders I've had on the show. So I'm guessing Hellstrom Group formed from one of your passions. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. That is spot on. That is exactly correct.
So what was going on in your world that you thought, now is the time for me to make Hellstrom a thing, make this a viable business? Because, I mean, you're going to go into the story, but what you do, like you said before the live, like the evening work, that is something that is super interesting and something that I know from people who do that kind of work is pure passion.
Yeah.
It's absolutely pure passion. So what made you do it? What made you get into this field?
Well, kind of one of the stories kind of baked in the name itself, the Hellstrom Group, because Hellstrom is a name of a guy from the late 1800s who became world famous, traveled internationally in the 1800s. So he's got to be good. He was a performer, and the whole shtick that he did is called contact mind reading. It would play out like this. Somebody in the audience would hide his paycheck or some valuable object somewhere in the entire auditorium. And then a random volunteer would just put their hand on Hellstrom's shoulder, and he would be able to feel their micromuscular, non-conscious resistance or going with him in a certain direction. And it was all non-conscious communication, and he would be able to find the object. So it wasn't like the volunteer was trying to lead him there. It was just that thinking about the object, that thought came through their body and through the connection, kind of like partner dancing.
Yeah.
Hellstrom was able to do these impossible things.
The subconscious took over.
Exactly. So he was successful because of his connection and ability to understand that dynamic. Yeah. And I was like, that's perfect.
And so, back then, though, as well, that sort of show, that sort of mastery would have been just completely mind-blowing for anyone in that show or anyone in whoever met him. Obviously now, a couple of hundred years later, it's got a little bit more expanded, a little bit more understood. You know, mentalists and that side of work is still very popular. I think Darren Brown is literally one of my heroes.
He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal.
Blows my mind every time. I mean, this whole podcast could just be talking about our love of Darren Brown. And I'm not even going for that. But for you, where did the passion come from for you? Where did that spark come from to even start looking into this?
Yeah, that's exactly how I found this dude from the 1800s. Like, how in the world do you find out about this guy? Exactly. And it's straight up because I grew up doing magic tricks for my parents, my family, boring them to pieces with just awful stupid stuff.
How many times can you throw up a load of ribbons?
Exactly. Like, oh, again, Jonathan, big whoop, we've seen this 1,000 times. No, this one's totally different. Sure it is. So my parents are saints is really what it is. But basically, starting as a kid doing magic tricks, and every single beginner magic trick book has, here's some card tricks, here's a rope trick, here's some mind reading tricks, here's tricks you can do with stuff around the house. And I'm like, okay, those other things are cool, but wait, mind reading? What in the world is that about? And they're still tricks, but to me, they've always been the most fascinating aspect of the magic spectrum.
Yeah.
Likewise. So that's exactly what I just specialized in, right? And imagine you're a 13-year-old kid. You've been doing this a while and you're getting kind of good, and you're a grown ass adult, and this 13-year-old kid can tell you what street you grew up on. Like, that's terrifying.
I was in a similar boat when I was about 13, 14. That's when I sort of discovered Darren Brown. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to school, and for about 2-3 weeks, I was just giving every single person toothaches. I was using it for evil.
So, yes, exactly. It is a tool. It can be used for good or evil. And, you know, it's nice to have a balance. For every good thing, exactly, you got to do one evil thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, that's it, man. And once you kind of get a taste of the dark side like that, it is supremely interesting. And over the years, it became kind of my meta passion, which is the tricks are fun. And they're great in the moment to make yourself feel cool and to make friends and be popular. It gets even more interesting once you start thinking about, why are these tricks possible in the first place?
Yeah.
So not how does this trick work, but why are tricks possible? Right, on a more kind of fundamental level. And the fact that magic tricks are amazing to everybody, regardless of where they grew up or background, that the magic tricks will still work, to me, shows me that magic is tapping into fundamental human processes that are applicable regardless of the culture. So to me, that is way more valuable. It's like being able to hack into the admin user panel on the brain's system, whereas most people haven't even read the user manual. So you're getting kind of root access to these processes that you can then make do things that most normal people have no clue is even possible.
Yeah.
Right. To me, that's really cool.
I completely agree. I think that's one of the reasons I got into the world of sort of NLP and psychology and all those sort of things that are linked to it, is purely down for my fascination on how the mind works and
exactly
how the mind tricks us and validates anything we want, and we can justify anything we want as a human, which even that term alone interests me.
But yeah.
For you, obviously we had this passion, and from a very young age, you, like you said, you kind of started, you almost were behind that show, behind the magic, right? You were trying to figure it out. You just weren't wearing that full mask.
Yes, yes.
When did you then start thinking, actually, this could be something I can turn into a service that businesses can really thrive off because of the power that you can give them and that knowledge.
Early on, the passion was rewarded. When I was 13, I got paid $200 to do magic tricks at a company's summer picnic. So technically, that was my first corporate entertainment engagement.
You were rolling in it.
Yeah, I was fit like so many candy bars, Butterfinger galore, right? So that was kind of early on. And then I transitioned into being a full-time performer right out of college and went on the road and performed mainly at colleges. And it was, that was going well, but then the autograph line, college kids would be like, man, I can't even imagine doing what you do. And they mean that in the, I can't imagine how that trick works, but also, wait, you make a living doing this weird thing that I've never even heard of before today.
Their training is become an accountant.
Right, right. So those were unceremoniously my first coaching clients. So talking to them for 5 minutes, and then I started getting emails like 2 years later going, hey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. You blew my mind. I had no clue that was that kind of stuff was possible. And here's what I'm doing now as a consequence. And I can't thank you enough. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Right. And it was, that was the first glimmer of, oh yeah, not everybody thinks the way that I do. The psychological principles I use on stage, you know what? I've been using them off stage in my own career because I grew up as a poor kid in North Carolina. It's mountains. It's very poor area of America. And now I travel the world. Like, okay, that's not an easy path.
You're like the small town kid who's made it.
Right, right. So that was the first kind of glimmer that this stuff is valuable. And then as I got more interested in how to run my business more effectively and kind of get more out of the time I had, I started doing more business reading, and all these business consultants were claiming to understand motivational psychology, fundamental decision making. And I was like, all of this stuff is based off horrible, faulty psychology research. And they're all just rehashing the same crap research from the 70s. This is all garbage. I know this better than they do, and I can prove it with a 70-minute mind reading show from Vegas from international clients. Like, I can back this stuff up with real-time examples of showing people that they can do impossible things. And I was like, man, I'm going to eat their lunch. So that was the beginning of being able to translate from mentalist speak of 10,000 years worth of back catalog of understanding how human thinking is faulty and how to make use of it. And then applying that in a variety of contexts of, because really think about it. As a mind reader, I'm not actually psychic. I'm just really good at communicating lies. Yeah, it's and part of it is kind of like, think about making a painting that looks exactly like it's real. The only way you're going to make a painting that looks exactly like it's real is if you study what real looks like, then cultivate the skill set of representing reality. Then you'll have the skill set to perfectly represent a real impossibility. Then you could paint a dragon like it's lifelike, or a unicorn, whatever. But it's only after you've studied perfect reality can you fabricate a perfect fantasy. So magicians are the world's best communicators. It's just that they're perfectly communicating lies. And that's only possible once you are super capable of communicating the truth.
I love that. So one of the things I was wondering, if with the B2B side, when you're going into businesses and you're training them, do on some level they kind of expect a show, right? They're kind of expecting this showman to turn up and deliver a mind reading or whatever you're selling them.
Right.
But actually, what happens is they get trained and they get taught all these amazing lessons. Is that right. often a shock for them? Is that, or am I assuming that's sort of what's happening?
It would be if I marketed myself that way to my direct clients, right? So the person, Hellstrom Group, doesn't make mention of mentalism. Okay. Hellstrom Group doesn't make mention of my background as a mind reader and as a Vegas performer. Exactly. Because are you going to pay me $10,000 for an hour of my time because I know some magic tricks?
Yeah, see, that's what I was wondering, because it's such a, you know, I'm sure both sides of your life are super similar. Mm-hmm. The things you're doing on stage are probably very, very similar. But it's always interests me when people turn that into the corporate offering. And it's almost a shame that you have to polish it up or let's say dumb it down for people to understand it.
Right.
But when you started Hellstrom Group and you started working with clients, how quickly did you learn their language? Let's put it that way.
Very. Very. Because that is... Human relationships are a protocol, and the language you use is the protocol of accessing trust. And that's why people who think of themselves as overtly intellectual and overly deep thinkers of, I consider real ideas. And you know what? This surface level cocktail party, it's so blasé. I wish we didn't waste our time with these trivialities. I prefer the deep intellectual conversations.
We all know someone like that.
Exactly. It's like, okay, great. If you can't even say, hi, my name's Jonathan, nice to meet you. What brings you here? Oh, that's great. Did you have any trouble getting here? If you can't even cover the pleasantries, how in the world can I trust you with my deepest, darkest fears? Right? So you have to know the proper protocol of accessing trust with the person you're trying to connect with. And trying to sidestep that process means that you're just shooting yourself in the foot and demanding other people meet you where you are. And that's the quickest way to go live on top of a mountain by yourself.
And you must see that a lot, though, when you walk into a room, a corporate room, and often with corporate training, people are sort of told to be there, aren't they? They're told to be in the room. They're told that, hey, you're going to have some training. Jonathan Pritchard's coming in. He's gonna tell you X, Y, Z. So you naturally have those people in the room that either go, hey, I already know everything. I don't need to be here. You know, as you walk on stage, I've done it, you've done it. Those people are like shining beacons of light that you just go, this is going to be fun, right? For you, when you walk on stage and when you start your training program, how do you break those barriers down so quickly? Because that's something I guess you have to do, right?
That's a really sharp question that only comes from somebody who's experienced that too. So yeah, like recognizes like for sure there. And it really is super important, because there's a lot you have to do in the first 20 seconds, which is fulfill their expectations so that they now aren't expending mental energy figuring out what in the world's going on, so that their shields go down. Once their shields go down, you can then hijack their process. And for me, it usually starts with being available before go time. So if it were more like a performance and everybody goes, oh, you can't see the performer before, right? It ruins the illusion. I'm actively working to appear like a normal human being. Sure. Like that's my mission, is to just be a normal person.
That waiting time, that level of expectation is just going up and up and up as everyone.
Right. And also on the other end of the, oh, this guy's going to be full of himself. Oh, here's another corporate trainer jerk who's here to tell me about his new latest book.
Yeah.
I've been in sales for 15 years. He's got nothing new to teach me. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I think about every single person that's in that room and think about the trust that they're showing just being there in the room, even though they're being told that their paycheck depends on it. But even still, I need to respect their time as much as humanly possible. So I have to make it worth their attention from the first moment. So I start with that kind of appreciation for their witnessing our time together. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's right. Instead of being like, well, I'm the expert here and they're going to bow to my will. And then now it's a battle of egos. Exactly. So then as I walk out, I introduce myself, and a big part of it is to have a written introduction for the person introducing me, because the person introducing me thinks they're doing me a favor by going, oh, Jonathan, he does these fantastic little tricks. They're the sweetest thing. He's so nice. And you're just going to love him. He just like your uncle did tricks.
Your gran trying to introduce you.
Exactly. Because it's usually somebody in the HR department who's just super lovable and likable. That's exactly the wrong way to set the tone for these salespeople who are just really hard boiled. Like, yeah, I've been around the block before. Exactly. So having a written introduction and making it super clear that say exactly these words is a good way to start the conversation. So then as I come out on stage or in the boardroom or the ballroom or this meeting room that used to be a coat closet, wherever it is that the team's meeting, I like to capitalize on the goodwill of, I'll give this guy a minute. I'll give him a minute to see what's going on.
He's got.
Exactly. Then there's a fun play along thing that I've done since I was 13. And it's a old juggler's trick of a coordination demonstration where one hand is doing one thing, the other hand's doing another thing at the same time. So it's kind of like patting your head, rubbing your stomach. Sure. Starts off really stupid. And everybody's like, yeah, I'll follow along. Okay, the other hand, yeah, I'll follow along. Okay, now we're going to do both of those at the same time. And then they're like, wait, what? I'm like, yeah, we're going to do both of these. Like, oh, all right, here we go. I'm the only person in the room that can do it because it's a really, really wacky kind of percussion, drummer, syncopated, different time signatures at the same time kind of weirdo thing. Yeah. And it's nonverbal, but it gets the idea across. I can do things that you can't.
Yeah, so powerful.
And it's a fun thing. We're all having fun, and I don't say that explicitly. Mm. It's just done, right? There's no arguing with it, and it's stupid. It's a stupid little human trick. Like, who cares?
As well, right?
So exactly.
At the scene, they can't. Like you said, they cannot disprove it.
Exactly.
They've seen that you can do something that they can't. Their ego is gonna go down a little bit. That barrier that we know is up is gonna come down. I absolutely love that way of just using that. I'm sure there's a name for that first minute or that first 20 seconds, but using that first minute when you're in that
room. Yeah, I just think of it as like good graces, right? Yeah. The polite attention before they decide whether or not to invest or disengage, and that's it. Exactly. And then, I was just going to say, then there's a little more involved collaboration piece because like, okay, you just demonstrated a skill that sure you've practiced before, but then I do kind of a lightning addition trick where random numbers are called out and create this random jumble of digits and it's like 3 6 digit numbers. And then I add them up before they could even get through it on their cell phone. And then the total is the day of today. And then that's just like, wait a minute. I actively tried to screw him up. Yeah. I tried to throw him weird numbers. I know that there's no way that should happen because I actively tried to interfere with this process just to give him a good ribbing and it still worked. Okay, this guy's a little scary. He's right. So it's still a very friendly, like, all right, guys, here we go. But at that, it's still in the back of their lizard brain. It recognizes that okay, this dude's different.
Yeah.
There's something going on here.
You instantly earn respect.
Right. And then I go, all right, how many of you can say the alphabet backwards? And Nero was like, no, I've never had sufficient motivation to learn that stupid. I don't even want to waste my time.
And you're like, well, I have had that motivation.
Exactly. And then we do kind of a reverse auction of, all right, how long would it take you? Sufficiently motivated. How long would it take you? And most people are like a week, a day. And then there's one dude who's like an hour. And I was like, oh, so you could do this in an hour and you're 47 years old and you've never spent an hour learning to do this trick. And he's like, yeah, okay. It's like, what, 57 minutes? That'd be too short. Where's your limit, right? So then he finally is like, all right, yeah, 30 minutes would be too short. I couldn't do it. Just for everybody there to buy into themselves that it's impossible for them to learn to do this thing within 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I teach them how to do it in 3.
Love it.
And then a dude who is the biggest skeptic does it in 3 minutes. And then they're just like, oh my God, what is going on? So now they're just full of questions. Now I can pull the curtain back and explain exactly how everything's worked. And now they've got a context to see actually how simple it is once you understand a system. And that is the sales conversation. That's the negotiation process, that system, right? So it's all about understanding the thought processes within a particular experience or context enables you to do things that seem impossible if you don't have that understanding. And by then they're just like, oh, okay. Yeah, this guy's on a whole other level. Yeah. I want to hear what he has to say.
When you leave a company, when you've done this and people are in the room going, that was amazing. I've actually learned something. Whereas the last 7 trainings they got in, they probably didn't really learn anything.
Turn to workbook, page 73.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
And oh, don't forget, I've given you all a free copy of my book that's on your desk, you know.
Right.
When you leave it, and obviously, you know, having that feedback with the corporations about actually you've created change in these organizations, which for you is obviously one of the missions, right? You want to create change. You want to make it so that they're better. They're better people, they're better salespeople, and overall the business is doing a better thing. How does that make you feel knowing that if we loop this whole story together, it's like you started off by getting paid $200 for performing some magic, and now, you know, you're in a room teaching people not magic or illusions or anything, but you're actually teaching them how to communicate better. How does that make you feel as someone that's been on that journey and now obviously older and probably wiser as well?
Little bit, very, very little bit, but more, I hope. but really, it to me is the most meaningful work that I do. And looking back on it, the work that I do today really is just hyper leveraged value for my clients in exactly the same way that somebody decided to give a 13-year-old kid $200. Because they thought it would be interesting and help their employees, even if it's just having fun. Mm-hmm. So to me, business consulting really is the most powerful way that I know how to make the world a better place in the maximum way possible, given my time on the planet.
Yeah.
Because I am 1,000% convinced that business is one of the most ethical things that a human being can engage in. It is the voluntary exchange of value. You're giving me dollars, and I'm giving you my time, my knowledge, my experience, my whatever it is. And I value those dollars more than the thoughts in my brain. You value the thoughts in my brain more than your dollars. And we both have more value after that exchange than we did before. So to me, that is the most amazing magic trick in the history of humanity. So now a business can now provide that at scale for all of their customers and clients, but also by virtue of working at that business, the employees can feed themselves, can have a place to live. So if you can help a business help the employees be more effective at their jobs, the quality of their life is going to go up. The CEO's life quality is going to go up. It's also going to have a positive impact on every single customer and client from that point forward. So in a single afternoon or 2 days of intensive training for just a room of 50 people, actually 16 people is our top levels, but we got more delivered. So if you're thinking about booking us, we can do it. But basically in 2 days, you can literally change the lives of thousands of people who are going to be working there and doing business with that company alone. How else in the world are you going to help thousands and thousands of people with your time and energy? Yeah. To me, that is the best way for me to spend my time.
Possibly,
so, yeah.
The best answer to that question I've ever heard as well, because that just shows how connected you are to your business and how connected you are to what you want to achieve and what you want your clients to achieve, which hats off to you. You're obviously doing a fantastic job, and I would love to be a fly on the wall in one of your sessions. I think it would be so entertaining, but also just learning wise and everything in between. For you, Jonathan, you know, you obviously have this huge passion, but what is it that still makes you want to do it outside of business? Because I know that you still do sort of little side gigs, let's put it that way. And for a lot of people, you know, your business is doing well. You don't have to do that. Again, it comes back to that passion side. But is that also your sort of your like learning phase? Is that where you make sure you're keeping yourself in check?
Actually, yeah, because live performance is unlike any other laboratory setting you're ever going to find. And that goes back to that weird psychology research angle, which is most of that research is done on college freshmen in a classroom, just self-reporting. How do you feel about this? What, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not normal. That's not representative of average humanity, right?
Exactly. How do you feel about this very specific thing
in
this
very specific
moment of your life in this very specific environment?
Right. But a performance is live data at scale of 100 people all at the same time are responding to my script, to my movements, to my pauses. Everything is communicating to that audience, and I'm getting real-time live feedback, even if it's through Zoom or video stuff, yeah, as it is now. So doing the live performances is still that same fascination with connecting with other human beings. Yeah. And helping them ignore their problems for an hour is still great. Even if I don't get a chance to show them and give them the tools to solve those problems permanently, like we do in the workshops, but still it's an honor and a privilege to distract people from their misery for at least an hour.
Lovely put. And I guess one of the final questions for you is, what's next? Because like you mentioned, we're doing everything online now. What's next for you as a business? What sort of steps have you put into place so that you can still be doing what you're doing?
So doing virtual coaching, virtual advising, doing virtual presentations and training.
With the word virtual in front of it.
Oh, yeah. That is all the rage now. But basically, I mean, helping people understand how to appear better on camera, have good lighting, actually have at eye level the camera, not don't put the laptop in your lap and have
your nose.
Exactly. It's all about managing the right details to facilitate communication and connection. That's it. So it's just a relentless focus on how can I deliver the most value to the most people the most effectively. Let's do it that way.
Amazing. Listen, Jonathan, you're, like I said earlier, you're obviously someone that has a huge amount of passion, and it's been a privilege to just have this short amount of time with you. And I feel like we could probably talk for hours. So definitely have to get you back on season two, where a little sneak peek, that may be the format. But my last question, and there's always one more question.
Yeah.
There's always one more question. how can people find out more about you, man?
Oh, let's see. Actually, the best place to go is mindreaderuniversity.com. I got tired of people asking, like, did you go to college for all this stuff? I was like, no, I have a degree in painting. Like, that's
and you put that to fantastic use, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is still a huge part of my life. And I'm creating like crypto artwork, and it's I love the interplay of technology and imagination. Like, it's awesome. So I figured, you know what? Let me just create my own university where I share my book, my conversations with interesting people and all my video courses. That's the place to go. From there, you can find everything out about me. And on the corporate side, yeah, hellstromgroup.com is there, but MindReader University is the more fun place to go.
More fun. And hey, we all need more fun in our life. Let's put it that way.
Amen to that.
Jonathan, listen, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being a guest here on Founders 365. I've greatly appreciated it.
Dude, and thank you so much for having me, Stephen. I really appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts, man.
Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for listening and watching. This has been Founders 365.